Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And we are back with Divine Intervention. Not only are we tasting one bottle of hopefully very nice red wine, we're actually going to taste two in this podcast, both from the same producer. One that's so fresh and ripe and wonderful, it doesn't actually have a proper label on it yet, but I'm sure that within a very short time it'll be in the stores and you'll be able to pick up a few cases. The estate is Belfield, but before I introduce the wines, it's as always time to go down to our food and wine guru, award-winning food writer, winner of the Eat Out Personality of the Year or Personality of the Decade or Personality of whatever it was, Michael Olivier. Michael, even though I can't remember who you are, great to chat to you again.
Thanks, John. Lovely to be with you.
Well, I know who you are, it's just what you are. And in the Joburg studio, I always introduce him last, so I'll introduce him last again. So, I will go to Colleen Morris from the Wine Concept Store in the Blueberg Centre. I always say that, but of course, if people are listening to this podcast in Cape Town, you have sister stores there, don't you? Or brother stores or something.
Yeah, peers.
Peers, okay.
Two stores in Cape Town, thank you.
Yeah, well, after too much wine, we're all peers. We also have from Gumtree, South Africa, Jeff Osborne.
Hello, John. Good to be here again. Thank you.
Great. Great that you fought your way through the traffic yet again to join us, Jeff. And I said he's last. He's certainly not least. He's the man who makes these podcasts possible through his technical genius, hosting us in his Joburg studio, Malcolm McDonald. Malcolm, great to chat to you again. Thanks for coming in. I know you like red wine. I hope you like these.
I think I will. Thanks, John.
Okay, well, as usual, Michael, I've waffled on far too long without actually getting to schlurp. So I believe we're starting with the 2011 Shiraz or Syrah from Belfield. Is it any good?
Absolutely. Yeah, the farm is owned by a friend of mine, Michael Kreft. I've known him for as long as I can remember. And he's producing some really amazing stuff there. The Syrah 2011 is one of them. It has a 10% Cabernet Sauvignon blended into it. And after a bit of cold soaking on the skin, fermentation takes place, and then fermented dry and then into French oak barrels for malolactic and maturation for 11 months or so. This for me is just a classic cool climate Syrah. I mean, weather in Elgin is just so perfect for growing really, really good grapes. What I like about the wine is it's got sort of overt fruit, nice and sort of sappy and complex, and then that just lovely little zing of acidity. And of course the fruit there is plums, mulberries, and there's just a little in the aftertaste you just pick up a little bit of sort of cocoa and oak spice.
And the odd grape.
Long, lingering, lovely aftertaste. Really, really nice wine.
Well, Mike, as I think I've told you before, and I'm pretty sure Colleen was there as well, I went to the Cape Winemakers Guild tasting, which was hosted by Ned Bank, an absolutely superb event. There were quite a few Shiraz wines there. I have to say, it wasn't my favourite varietal. I admired the skill with which it was made. I just didn't enjoy those wines very much. And for a while, I was a bit prejudiced against Shiraz or Syrah. All has changed with this. I think this is an absolutely wonderful wine. It doesn't have any offensive odours or flavours or anything. It is gorgeous. It is gluggable. I shall see if I've got another bottle hidden somewhere. Well done, Michael. A great choice. But what do I know? Colleen.
Well, first of all, when you poured this wine, I thought like, whoa, look at that colour. It is deep. It's inky. It's thick. So I immediately thought, okay, this is going to be full of flavour. And it certainly is. It really is just full of berries. And like you say, plums, mulberries, lots of berries in there. And I like that sort of warm, spicy notes coming through. That's really delicious. And as you say, you know, Shiraz can often have some strange odours. And this certainly doesn't have any of that. It's just full of fruit and full of spice. Quite delicious, yeah.
Good. Well, that's 3 out of 3 so far. I think if Michael, you didn't say how much you enjoyed it, but I presume you haven't been spitting too much.
You
swallowed the odd drop. Jeff Osborne.
Yeah, well, John, I've actually migrated more recently to Shiraz, and I'm enjoying Shiraz. So I'm delighted to be tasting this particular one, and I agree that this typifies a full-bodied wine. Being an ex-oil man, I would describe this as a heavy viscosity liquid, and it's got everything in it. Certainly strong berries and fruit and plum. And Michael's right, I think a good midwinter fireside drink, or certainly around the table with a lamb, roast lamb, or a good steak, I think great.
An ex-oil man, Jeff. I'm just a bit greasy, sorry. Malcolm McDonald.
So this, when I took the first sip, reminded me why I like red wine. This is the thing that sort of red wine should have, is that long discovery of all these new flavors for a long time after you've taken the sip. And I think that's what really makes this special. It's got lots and lots of things going on. So really, really an enjoyable wine. I wouldn't go as far as glaggable. It's quite heavy, but it's very, very tasty.
And as Jeff Osborne suggested, we're sitting here on a rather warm Joburg day. I think if we wait a little bit longer into slightly cooler weather, this may be even more enjoyable. Michael, just to confirm, Shiraz and Syrah, what's in a name?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the sort of the more fruit forward Shiraz is like the Australian ones tend to be called Shiraz, whereas those which are made more in a sort of southern French style, slightly more serious and ageable, are called Syrah.
But it's the same grape, basically.
It's the same grape.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Hoping that Belfield doesn't just have one star. We're trying another of their wines. This time from 2011. My glasses really aren't working well today. Fortunately, the pacemaker is ticking along. It's again from Elgin. It's Belfield's Magnifica Cabernet Sauvignon. Tell us about it, Michael.
Well, here is one of your sort of classical Bordeaux-style blends. 86 Cabernet Sauvignon, 7 Cabernet Franc, and 7 percent Merlot. The lovely cool climate wine. And one of the things that I really, really like about this, it's had 11 months in French oak barrels. One of the things that I like about it, it's a very elegant wine. It's not one of those sort of blockbusters. It's got huge dignity, I think, this wine. It's got lots of flavor. It's nice and complex. It's got all the sort of the berries that you want there, the brambles and the mulberries and the black currants and the cassis. And it's just got this lovely sort of soft, silky, velvety tannin. And this aftertaste that just hangs around forever.
Well, I'm enjoying it. Maybe it's a little lighter than the Syrah we tried earlier. Certainly not, none the worse for that. I think this is a wine I'd probably want to chill a little bit more than your normal red. But I think I could certainly enjoy this with anything like anything from the Braai, a nice steak, all sorts of mildly robust foods. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, this is the... I'm just trying to think. This, I think, would go really well with some cold beef. A sort of a fillet that's been cooked and left sort of medium rare, thinly sliced with some rocket and Parmesan cheese and a bit of olive oil and some really nice balsamic vinegar. I mean, this is the wine that I would choose for something like that.
I think it would even hold itself up against a not too spicy Oriental meal as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice stir fry.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Colleen. You've been sitting there sniffing and sneering. Tell us about it.
Michael, I just have a question. It says Cabernet Sauvignon on the label, but there is a bit of Cabernet Franc in there, isn't there?
There's you know, the 15% thing.
Yes,
there's,
yes.
It's 7% Cabernet Franc, 7% Merlot.
Okay, that's good, because I actually pick up quite a bit of that sort of mintiness and
yes.
a bit of that, nettle sort
yes.
of notes. And that for me is probably coming quite strongly from the Cabernet Franc side.
Yes,
absolutely.
And
that's really beautiful. And I think that's what makes this wine so attractive, really. If it was just a straight Cabernet, it probably would have been just a straight Cabernet, you know. But it's got a lovely edge to it, and it's got that lovely freshness to it. It's got the deep fruit flavors, the dark berries, but then there's this lovely sort of minty freshness that's coming through.
Yeah,
I think that gives you also the thing of thinking, maybe I should chill this a little bit because of that freshness that it has. And I agree, but that makes me also think that it could probably go quite well with a lovely roast leg or lamb, you know, that mintiness and that berryness that's coming through there.
Yeah, yeah.
Could probably go quite well with that too.
Okay, so it's not a straight Cabernet, it's mildly bisexual, but nothing wrong with that. Malcolm McDonald, are you enjoying it?
Very tasty, very rich wine. As you said, not quite as strong as the Syrah we've just had, but I certainly wouldn't call this mild or lacking in flavour at all. Very, very tasty.
And already, even though it's much younger than the Shiraz, it's drinking very well. This we've discussed earlier, calling wines which are made to be matured. To my mind, actually, it's the same age. My glasses aren't working that well anyway, but it's only 4 years old. After all, you get arrested in Britain for hanging around with four-year-olds. And here, hopefully, as well. I think it's still got a bit of aging potential, but what do I know? Jeff Osborne, are you enjoying this?
Yeah, well, first of all, John, for what you've poured me over, this is a four-year-old, it's a bit small for its age, but anyhow, I'll live with that. But Colleen addressed some of my intrigue, because I'm a big fan of, and always have been, of Cabernet Sauvignon, and I sense that there was something different about this, so I think she's addressed that, and that explains why it is different and lighter than I would have expected with a straight Cabernet. And I think it lends itself to a more variety of different types of meals and occasions.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I would say a little bit chilled, or slightly more chilled than what this one perhaps is, but delightfully palatable. Very nice indeed.
And of course, I think you've illustrated for us, Jeff, why Colleen's in the wine trade and you're in the motor trade. And I am just a journalist who drinks the bloody stuff. Forget the label.
I'm a high-octane oak.
I thought it was just the way you walked. Colin.
European outside room temperature, not South African room temperature. That's what we should serve at. So people also, you know, serve your red wine at room temperature, but I don't think that's a very good idea in South Africa, really, especially not on a day like today in Joburg. So yeah, certainly don't put your red wines in the fridge, or if you're so good to have a red wine fridge, you know, keep those temperatures nice and cool, because we drink our red wines too hot often in South Africa.
I think you'll find Colleen in a fairly recent podcast. We were having a lengthy conversation on freezing or not. I always get berated for throwing ice cubes into my red wine, but if I find it pleasant and I'm paying for it, so what? You are right. There are more scientific and elegant ways of chilling a wine. But after all, with Eskom around, you never know if the fridge is going to be working.
You're not going to have ice either.
Well, I can confirm that John always pays for the ice cubes.
thank you, Jeff. That's very kind of you. I'm a sellier for a few more 100-rand bottles of cider, as discussed 2 weeks ago. Okay, well, one other issue I think we should discuss, Michael Olivier. Do you feel like me that the Cape wine industry, South Africa's wine industry, is under quite a bit of pressure? We've discussed recently this don't drink and drive mooted legislation, which will prevent you from even having a thimbleful of alcohol before you get behind the wheel. But there's also talk of an advertising ban. It just strikes me that this should be one of our flagship industries, something in which each and every South African should be proud. But I just get the feeling that the politicians are happy to drink the stuff, but not to support it.
Broad brush question for broad brush answer. Yeah, I think the guys are under huge pressure. I mean, costs, labor, you know, there are all sorts of labor questions, production costs going up all the time. And yet, you know, now with the harvest going on, I mean, there is such excitement in the winelands about what's happening and what's going on. And of course, you know, you can't even hear in in Constantia, where we live, you can't go down the road too far without having to land up behind a tractor with lug boxes on the back full of grapes. But yeah, I think there is pressure, and I don't like this sort of Calvinistic approach that the government has towards the industry, because it makes a huge contribution. I can't remember the figures, but to the sort of the national money pool.
Colleen, as someone who was born and bred into the farming industry and now promotes wines on a daily basis because that's how you make your living, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. Again, yeah, broad. There's a lot of difficulties that the farming industry face, you know, and it's way more than what we can discuss on a wine podcast, a political podcast maybe. But, you know, as Michael said, you know, there are so many costs that influence the industry before it even is in a bottle and in a shop where it can be bought. I think the government is not just the drinking driving thing, it's from the bottom up when it comes to labor and cost. And now, you know, with it's middle of harvest time and these guys have to use generators just to do their cool fermenting and run all the pump over machines, all these things. So, you know, fuel costs, and there are so many things that are negatively or making it so much harder these days to just be a farmer or a winemaker.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, the pressure is on all the time. 12 months of the year, the pressure is on.
And Jeff Osborne, you work for a company which has its roots in America. There's also that element of xenophobia. Don't let foreigners own land. Don't let them buy land. It just strikes me that with so many people investing in the wine industry, which needs the investment, because after all, for many wine farms, it's not really a viable business. It's a nice hobby. One should really be enticing these people, nurturing them. But a lot of the political signals are so negative.
No, absolutely. And if it's any consolation to the wine farmers in the motor industry, I've been accused of being a member of that enough times. First of all, we contribute 4.7% towards the GDP. I don't know how you chaps can match that one. But 35 pieces of different legislation that the dealers have to deal with. It's a very, very pressurized industry as well. Margins are shrinking and so on. So, you know, business is not getting any easier. But I'm just wondering, with regard to that proposed piece of legislation that John referred to, one perhaps way of beating the breathalyzer might be to have one's wine intravenously. And on that note, I rest my case of wine.
Okay, well, that's given us all a shot in the arm, Jeff. Malcolm McDonald.
Yeah, I do think that the South African promotion, or the promotion of South African wine products and the whiskey products and the brandy products is not as strong as it should be, whether it's locally or whether it's internationally. I think especially locally. We have a lot more scope locally to promote the stuff that we produce locally. And that's why this podcast is such a good idea, I think.
It's such a good podcast as well. But unfortunately, once again, the clock has ticked away. We haven't had our loads shedded for a while, so we've been able to get all the way through it. It just remains for me to pop down to Cape Town to say, hi, Michael Olivier. Hopefully I'll be visiting you around the time this podcast goes out, so we'll be able to toast one another's health face to face. But for now, thank you very much indeed for sourcing two really enjoyable wines for us and for talking us through them with such grace, elegance and knowledge.
Oh, such a pleasure, John. Thank you.
And talking of grace, elegance and knowledge, Colleen, lovely to have you once again on our podcast. You must come often.
Always a pleasure.
Jeff.
Thank you, John. Terrific to be here again. Thank you so much.
And thank you for explaining to us why so many people in the auto industry are driven to drink. And, of course, he's last again, but I've got to be nice to him because this is his microphone, his place, and he's my technical guru. Malcolm McDonald, thank you very much indeed for taking part in this tasting.
Thanks, John. It was great fun.
I'm John Fraser. I'm great fun, and that was Divine Intervention.